Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Richard Retta, and aside from being a member of CCB, I'm also the transition coordinator and rehabilitation counselor for the Department of Rehabilitation, and I am based out of Oakland, California, and I also work out of the California School for the Blind about 2 days a week, and thank you for having me here.
Hello, my name is Monique McCorley from San Diego Braille Club Chapter, and I'm here because I'm interested in education, and I'm planning on going back to school soon.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jacqueline Jackson, and I'm the president, the newly elected president of San Diego Braille Club. And I have a passion for education. I worked for the Urban League of San Diego for 15 years as their education director. And I've also worked for an organization that is now called Access to Independence as their director of employment. So I've done both sides, and I know the need for education and going into employment. I am presently a development consultant. I do nonprofit fundraising and grant writing.
My name is Lorraine Foster. I'm also from San Diego. I'm the education chairperson for the San Diego Braille Club. I teach at Braille Institute. I'm a diabetic educator.
Yeah, hi, I'm Brian Connors. I'm a policy analyst for the Employment Development Department, work as staff to the Governor's Committee on Employment for People with Disabilities.
I'm Sarah Neer, and I am a guest of Brian Connors this weekend. And I work for AT&T.
How come you gave up the time?
Their equipment's so old, it's outrageous. My name is Keith Johnson. I'm a member of the Glendale Burbank Area Chapter, CCB, first vice president. I am employed by Los Angeles Unified School District. I've been with the district, 26 and a half years, going on 27 years with the district. And I work at Crescent Glen School. It's changed its derivation many times from Francis Blend School to Francis Blend Special Ed Center, back to Francis Blend School, sometimes it's known as an elementary school, now it's back to Francis Blend Special Ed Center. So, and our student body has changed a whole lot in the last 20 years. Most of our kids are multi-disabled right now. Next.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dan Kaiser, and believe it or not, I was a special education major at San Francisco State, but I got sidetracked into becoming a public relations director at the Center for Independent Living, and then my life went downhill after that. So, and I'm now governmental affairs director for the California Council of the Blind.
I'm Winifred Downing, and I live in San Francisco. I've been in the educational field for a very long time, taught at the Hadley School, and have been involved in education for the blind specifically.
Okay, and I'm Catherine Bales, and I'm the new program manager for Blind Field Services of the Department of Rehabilitation, and I'm very happy to be here this morning. And I took Braille lessons from the Hadley School for the Blind many years ago, so that's great. Anything else? That's about it.
Okay. I'm Paul Patchy, the better half. And I'm also the bodyguard. That's why I'm here.
All right. Now, we are going to let Dan Kaiser say a few words about the JAC meeting that happened last week before we get on to our other business at hand.
Actually, I just did a general overall status report, an update on special education in general, and I did happen to be at the JAC meeting last a week ago today at the Junior Blind of America. I happen to be the CCB representative for JAC, the Joint Action Committee, which is in a coalition of special educators and consumer groups. We have 13 members right now, including Guide Dogs for the Blind, Foundation Fighting Blindness, Braille Institute of America, Junior Blind of America, many school district, many special educators, and ophthalmologists and California Optometric Association so far are all members of the Joint Action Committee. And I'm the legislative reporter for them. First of all, the interesting thing in the early part of September, actually on September 12th, I attended the Commission on Teacher Credential Restructuring. There was a bill at AB 1209 that mandates, that deals with the issue of retiring education teachers. In the next 3 years, there's going to be hundreds of teachers retiring. And so how do we make the credential easier to deal with without watering down the credential or going to, you know, this failed emergency credential business that occurred a few years ago? In the hearing on the 12th of September, we had people... teachers, special educators, low incidence disability folks, we had SELPA directors, we had principals, you name it, there were every type of, special educator person and interest group there. A lot of ideas came out of that meeting, and basically they're going to recommend to the legislature in a bill package in January that the following should happen to the credential. One of the things that the low incidence people said is do not eliminate the VI credential. There was some talk and hysteria before that meeting on the 12th that the VI credential was gonna be gutted. This threat comes up as Winifred knows and you guys know, every few years they talk about, there's this threat about, you know, watering down the VI credential. But in fact, that is not going to happen. And actually, they're going to add a deaf-blind certification to the credential, which I think is a good idea. And the California Department of Education estimates there are 900 deaf-blind children in California. The other thing they want to do is right now they have a 0 to 2 birth to 2 years old portion. In the moderate credential, and they want to add 0 to 3 to that credential, which is sort of it apparently allows for more flexibility. Don't ask me why, but everybody seemed to like that. The credential would only have to let me look at this. Oh, okay. A student learning special ed would only have to create one student teacher, would only have to go into one student teacher, what do you call it? Hold on. Experience, you know, where you go in and you student teaching. Yeah, you'd only have to do that once, as opposed to, there was a lot of people who said they didn't like the fact that I only had 3.5 hours sleep. When you went into, get your credential, you had to learn all these core curriculum courses. And a lot of them would be duplicative because there's 6 elements to the VI credential. And so they didn't really deal with that, unfortunately. They didn't, they didn't streamline that part of it. Let's see, what else? Teacher, I'm using one finger and one hand to hold the microphone. I got it. I wish. Oh, okay. Special educator students seeking the credential will now have to take a teaching assessment, a performance assessment test. This will start in July of 08 if this legislation passes. The bad news, there's 100 $1 million being proposed federal cuts to special ed transportation. This is bad news. And comments are due by November 7th on these federal cuts. I don't, unfortunately, know the bill number. Interesting thing. You all know about the OT-ONM, the controversy. Occupational therapists have traditionally had a classification known as cane travel teacher. They don't have to get the collegiate answer and degrees necessary that an orientation and mobility specialist have to get. This organization has never supported OTs for ONM or for cane travel teaching. There is an interesting federal pilot program called the Vision Demonstration Project. The CMS coordinator for the U.S. government is seeking in this pilot demonstration project about 8 different states. California is not one of them. But to get ONM people to certify, then they can get reimbursed by Medicare. And so I looked on the ACB website, and I saw absolutely no reference to this. So I emailed Mitch Pomerantz and got him going on it, because it's really important that around the country where these pilot projects are going, that O&M people apply to this. This will have a huge impact on agencies serving the blind and their funding, because right now they have to come up with the funding for O&M people, and O&M people ain't cheap. Cane travel OTs are cheap. They're, you know, $14 to $35 an hour, whereas the O&M people want $45 an hour. Isn't that what rehab pays, Kathy?
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't know what rehab pays O&Ms. 45, yeah. And that's really all of my report. You know, that it's really important that if you are in Southern California, if you can get to the, or Northern California, if you can get to the JAC meetings, that would be great. We're going to have a JAC meeting at the next convention in the fall April 12th, April 20th. I think Saturday, April 20th, at Hilton Hotel. And we would like to see, you know, we're going to try to invite Tony Sauer, and Catherine, you're invited to check out. It's really interesting. It's a whole different dynamic. You know, you get into, by the way, the large print textbook issue has been pretty much worked out. And the new director of CSMT, by the way, on Paris Salb, Salb, S-A-L-B. If you don't know what CSMT, that's the California Special Media and Technology Center, otherwise known popularly as the Book Depository for the Blind. And there is a new regional librarian for California, and his name is Mike Marlin. He's blind. He runs Braille and Talking Book Library. And Mike Marlin is totally blind and has been a user of Talking Books. And he ran a library in New Mexico, or Arizona, and Oregon. So it's kind of refreshing to have a blind person. Just hope he's not like Silk. Thank you. That's it, and I'm out of here. I could ask questions, though.
Is there any special increase for special education teachers? There hasn't been for a long time. Has that been addressed at all?
The salary increase situation was supposed to the State Personnel Board. I like to call the State Personnel Board the black hole. It went nowhere. You know, CSB has been a little more proactive in that issue than Dr. Wittenstein, he's pretty proactive. And I know, but they are the loudest complainers in the blind community about that than anybody else. And I don't know, you know, that the union reps used to call me all the time, and I haven't heard them. Maybe they're waiting. I don't know. So I can't answer that question because, you know, no one's making a big stink lately about it.
Dan and I talked about this briefly the other day, but there was an emergency credential that was put into effect some years ago. Using the emergency credential, you could get a teacher in a room full of blind kids that, you know, had no knowledge of Braille at all. So I believe Dan said that has ceased. Is that correct, Dan, or do they still have some loophole that they can...
It has ceased. The emergency credential a couple years ago. However, there are still around that. Term practitioners, you know, they can get somebody in training to come in, and so that's what people are doing, principals are doing. And it's not just a conspiracy. It's that they really are shorthanded. They really have a difficult time getting low incidence employees because there's not many of us or them. Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. They're not paying commensurate to the educational whatever it takes to get it, all these credentials. And I think we've seen, but you know. Anyone else?
Los Angeles Unified does a mentorship program, and almost anybody could get into that. If you want to do special ed, you could do that. In fact, we have two at Blend who are in that mentorship program. In fact, we got one classroom teacher whose name doesn't even have a special ed credential because she took a class on an emergency basis, and I don't know how long she's going to be there. So, anyhow, but that's my comment, is that LA Unified has a mentorship program that they try to get more people interested in special ed to do that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm out of here.
Thank you, Dan. That was great. Next, we're going to hear from Richard Rader and Kathy Bales, and they're going to talk about the BEP YEP youth program and the other transition programs for youth, because they're working together with the Department of Education and Department of Rehabilitation, and this is a good thing. Finally, we're getting somewhere with people working together and for the common good of the youth trying to get employment.
Okay, good morning, everybody, and my name is Richard Retta, as I introduced myself earlier, with the Department of Rehabilitation, and it's good to see you here, Brian. And so Brian's heard my talk before, so if I miss something, Brian, I'm going to you. I'm kidding.
There we go.
Back in June, Brian and I spoke at the Foundation Finding Blindness event at Orange County Braille Institute. Many people were there. A lot of students were there, so it was really exciting. So thank you once again for inviting me back, Joni. We're doing something right because I remember being here a year ago, and I didn't get breakfast last year. I guess none of us got breakfast last year, so that's it's great to be back here. And what's that? No, I spoke briefly to your committee.
Yeah, now he's going to speak more.
Oh, do you have a mic too, Kathy?
Yes, I do.
So if I. unlike Dan, I've actually had less sleep. I went to bed at 4:30 this morning. So.
And I don't want to know what you were doing.
I wasn't working. I was just I was up to 4:30 in the morning. Anyway, thank you. There are a lot of things I do want to briefly mention, and if there are things that you want to have me elaborate on, I'm more than happy to do that. And as well, Kathy could also speak to that. But there are many exciting things that we're doing, and I will leave you with some handouts. And I have just about everything in print as well as in Braille. And the other thing I should mention is, like Joni, I'm the Department of Rehabilitation Blindfield Services representative on the Consumer Advisory Committee for the CSB, and they meet four times a year, so I think that's really important, and it's a great led by Dr. Wittenstein. Joni, were you going to mention anything about highlights about that? Okay, after I'm done, okay. One of the most exciting things I think we're doing right now is Tony Candela asked Kathy and I to put together a transition task force this past spring with the whole intent to increase the number of students that we are serving in Department of Rehab. I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, mm-hmm. as of this spring, we were those students ages 16 to 21 that were had been signed up for Department of Rehab had only totaled 460. Mm-hmm. And by September 30th of 2008, we are our goal is to double that number, if not surpass that. And that means we want to get students opened up with having a working relationship with a counselor so we can get them ready to prepare for college and or work and work experience. And so we put together a task force of counselors from virtually every unit, and I think we have 8 or 9 units in the state.
We have 9 units.
9 units in the state, and so spanning coast to from from the coast to the desert, and from San Diego to Eureka, we're trying to blanket the state and have counselors involved at every process and getting more students signed up for rehab, and that's not as easy because we really want to get out there. And with groups like this, we want to not only put this out, but put literature in your hand and let you know that we are open for business, and we do want to serve more students K through 12 with the intent to graduate and find a work experience, obviously those who qualify and whose primary disability is blindness. And the so that's going on. We meet quarterly, and I think the last number Kathy gave us through Joe.
I think it was 640. Was that right about right? Yeah.
Well, that's actually an increase from, because I remember you sent me something saying we had 561.
Yeah, no, it's gone up.
Wow, that's
again.
Great.
So we are making progress, but we really, it's hard to do it. Yeah, we need to get out there.
Being the transition coordinator for the state, it keeps me busy. Where I have a part-time caseload of 70, I'm also blanketing the state, going to workshops. In fact, I'll be down in L.A. in November, we're actually going to be partnering with the Braille Institute of Orange County and helping them increase the number of students they serve and how they can refer students to rehab and vice versa. And they want to start a similar program to what STEP, the Junior Blind's doing for the Student Transition Enrichment Program in L.A. And L.A. is a big area in Orange County. Can only grow from that, so that's great. What else are we doing? One of the most significant things that Tony Candela put together in 2006 was our BEP-YEP program. That's basically our youth employment program as sponsored by our BEP vendors, and Joni is one of those vendors, and she's been with us since the startup. Basically, what BEP-YEP is the programs to provide work experience to blind and visually impaired high school students in the summer, and where they can work along the BEP at the BEP sites with the BEP vendor, doing things such as working the cash register, stocking, doing interfacing with customer service, mopping, sweeping, all that fun stuff too, and. In 2006, we worked with the Junior Blind of America. We worked with the Society for the Blind in Sacramento. And we employed, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of around 10 students. This summer, we capitalized on our success, and we expanded that work experience program with youth, not only to the Junior Blind of America and the Society for the Blind, but as well as to the Valley Center for the Blind in Fresno, where we had a presence in Central California, as well as with the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco. So combined, this summer we provided part-time work experience, which is much needed for youth, to over 13 students in the state.
Yeah.
And maybe you want to speak about it from your point of view, Joni, in a minute. And it's really exciting. And unfortunately, the RSVC luncheon was canceled, but I still want to speak to the vendors, and maybe I can work with you, Joni and Paul, to get out to the vendors, and we want to get more BEP vendors on board statewide because the Orange County folks, Braille Institute folks, have expressed a great interest in help in having us do BEP in the Orange County area. As well, we're trying to break into San Diego. So my next call is, once things settle down, is to talk to David Hamlin and see what folks are down there, and see if we can increase BEP, YAP, because the whole goal is to provide work experience to youth. A lot of youth aren't getting paid work experience in the summer, where many of their sighted peers are working, let's say, at Magic Mountain, serving the pizzas, doing the entry-level work that students get in the summer, where they're getting paid, you know, $10 or $12 an hour, and a lot of our students aren't, or are doing volunteer work, and everything counts, but work experience is so essential. You guys have any questions so far? Yes, Winifred.
And what connection does all this have, for example, with the children in the San Francisco school systems? I have not heard of them having a connection with rehab, and I've not heard of many transitional activities going on there. But, you know, San Francisco's been out of compliance with the education thing for so long that I don't know what happens there.
The San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind, as you may be aware, has V. Huyen, who runs their youth program, and he and I have been working together. And that's another thing I was going to bring up. We do in Northern California, we have a transition council, and we have one down here in Southern California. They're not as active, but it's basically comprised of the agencies serving the blind who have a youth component, including the School for the Blind, myself in rehab, counselors who can attend, the Society for the Blind, the Lighthouse for the Blind, the Lions Center for the Blind, who recently started the youth program with our support, the Vista Center for the Blind in Palo Alto, and even the Santa Clara Valley Blind Center. And there might be other agencies I'm missing, but basically we meet three times a year, and one of the projects we put on is a youth summit up at Enchanted Hills Camp in Napa for 2 days of intensive career workshops. Resume writing, oh yeah, it's still there. 311 acres. So we go up there and we do career readiness workshops, resume writing. We do a blind version of The Apprentice, where they're trying to sell a product and they have to go in front of a panel of judges, with the whole intent of preparing students for career experience, career work experience. A lot of the high schools statewide have transitional partnership programs, TPP programs. The concern that we have with them, and is one of the goals I hope to work on this year, is a lot of the TPP job developers, workability job developers, often don't work very well or very closely with mostly students who are totally blind. If you're low vision, oh yeah, I'll help you find a job at Trader Joe's bagging groceries, but they tend to, you know, their brains fall out of their head, as my friend likes to put it so kindly, that they don't know how to work with a totally blind person. So we're trying to get on the agenda to work and maybe do a training at one of the workability conferences where all the TPP teachers and instructors come statewide. Did you want to say anything at this point, Kathy? Because I'm just
I just want to make sure that we really do get the word out that if you are involved with youth at all who are blind or visually impaired, make sure that they are getting connected with our counselors. We have a counselor for each one of our units, but they are basically liaisons for this task force. We want all of our counselors to be involved with reaching out to the high schools. And we are even considering taking on students that are under the age of 16.
As early as age 14, but
yeah,
that's not...
Yeah, starting at the age of 14. And mainly because we want the parents to be involved with knowing about rehab. We want the students to be aware from an early age to have a mentor in their counselors. That the counselors can be their mentor and help them to realize that there really is opportunities for employment. Just like their peers are thinking about going on to college, thinking about careers. So many of them, Richard came down to San Diego, so I got to participate with some of the presentations to the high schools.
Yep, back
and
in January.
Parents were there, and there were so many parents that they opened their eyes with, wow. You know, I didn't know that my students would be able to have this kind of opportunity.
We had eighth graders there.
Eighth graders there. It was so exciting, and it was just exciting to talk to the parents. So we really are wanting to go down lower and lower in our ages, not just start at 16, because oftentimes we don't even get them at 16. It's so important that we start young.
And we also, you know, want to be a part of, to the best of our availability, is be a part of the IEP process. IEP to IPE. So if we can be
the ITP.
The ITPs too. But we really want to be involved in, we want it to be a tangible experience so the students really understand what is rehab. Because when I was 16, and granted, I went to many programs, rehab was kind of dull and boring. And they said, well, sign up when you're 18 and you'll be fine. And I did, and I suffered my first year of college.
Yeah. That's why it's so important. Really, we need your help with this.
And like Kathy said, a lot of the students need mentors, need peer supports, and what the counselor can do is, and along as well as being a mentor, he or she can put the student in touch with, let's say, one of my clients wants to be a doctor, and he hasn't talked to a doctor. How do I become a doctor, Richard? So I'll say, well, I know six or seven doctors or lawyers who are blind, who I helped get employed, or a coworker helped get employed, and we can go to our own internal network and go, hey, Al, you were a doctor, and I'd like to have you talk to my client here, and you can be that, you know, local mentor. Something like what Career Connect is doing through AFB, just localizing it.
Now, I have a little bit to say about I just want to give you some basic examples. Maybe it can bring it home a little clearer to you about, I was really fortunate to work with the BEP-YEP program, and some of the things, you would be shocked. I had two teenagers, one that had some partial vision, and he also could use Braille. And I said, now you have to bring with you something that you can write down the prices of what I'm selling, so that you will be able to be independent and work the cash register by yourself. So he comes in the next day. I'm all ready. I can write everything down. He brought with him a 2020 pen, which was excellent, and three pieces of paper. And he takes one piece of paper for three items. Now, my store has probably 150 items. And maybe not quite that much, but, you know, close to that.
Yeah.
So I said, now, where, how are you going to remember the other items? Well, I'll just write down the important ones. So we discussed that, and we said, well, you know, I cannot let you on my register until you start remembering the prices. So tomorrow, you need to bring some more paper so you could write down the rest of the prices. He said, all those prices? I said, well, do you have a Brailler? You would rather write it in Braille? No, I'm not good in my Braille. I don't really like it. I said, okay, well, we'll see what happens. So the next day he says, well, I forgot my paper. So, well, I guess you can't cashier. I said, you have to, the first thing I guess you have to do is mop. He said, well, I'm not here to clean. I said, well, you know, everybody does that. Everybody has to clean. I have to clean. You have to clean.
It's a humbling experience.
It's part of the part of the program. And so he said, well, I guess I will. But, you know, I'd rather not. I said, well, I guess we all would rather not. But it was amazing to me to really find out what happens with kids, that what they really think. They think that coming to work is good enough. I'm here and you're lucky to have me. And that's it. And where do they become accountable? How do we make these kids responsible and accountable adults? Because their parents have allowed them to think that they were just precious as they are. Mm-hmm. And they are. But they've been told that they're just fine the way they are. And they just have to show up. That's it. So I had to be really strict. And then I had a little girl who,
tough love.
The first time she came to work for me, she said, well, I'm not getting in that elevator. I said, well, how would you like me to get you across the other building? Because it's either cross the light rail tracks, and I'd rather not, or go through the building, and we need to use the elevator. So we get on the elevator finally after about 15 minutes of discussing it. Get on the elevator, and she says, you know, I've never been on an elevator with anybody except for my mother. I said, I'm sorry, but I said, I'll make sure you don't get hurt. And then we get off the elevator, and she said, now, she heard my cane, and she said, are you blind? I said, yeah. She said, I would never have got on the elevator if I knew you were blind. So It was very eye-opening to me. And then we had, at another time, I had another student that who was also totally blind, and he could not count change back. Well, I know this student's teacher because she works at CSB. So when the school year began, I called her and I said, now, this boy needs to work with a talking register. He needs to work with coins. He is a very smart boy, and he will get out of it if you let him. He knows. Now, I gave him, when I went back to visit her classroom a couple of weeks ago, I gave him $6.59 in coins, and I mean all mixed up coins, and he counted all of them. And now he's learning how to give change back. But, you know, these kids, yes, a lot of the kids today, they have other learning disabilities besides their blindness, but that doesn't mean they can't work.
That's right.
And that doesn't mean they don't have some great skills.
And this is what this program is trying to model. And just to give you some more specifics, because I think we're only hoping to expand this with your support, but the BEPYEP model is, it's 5 weeks in the summer. In some instances, it's 6 weeks. The junior blind has the students actually live on campus because the students are going far to downtown LA, and it's a big city, so we don't want kids traveling the buses alone if they're going to be there. So they pair up and they take the bus there. But in the society, the students get there on their own or get dropped off. But it's 5 weeks. The first week usually is orientation. We do screening in the spring. We want to screen in students. We're not just handing out jobs. We're having them fill out a job application with our community agencies. And they do the interview, they dress up, and then if we have a pool of BEP vendors, then we have them, such as Los Angeles, interview the students, and then they'll pick who the best applicants are. So it's a real, real engaged experience. So the students are now, the week before they start, they get mobility training by the agency to and from the job site, whether they're taking the bus, paratransit, or if mom's dropping them off at the curb, we're getting them, you know, acclimated, and, we had some students who had multiple disabilities in Los Angeles, so and some people had, you know, health issues, so we had people pair up, so someone's asthma was an issue, but the other student was there to help them get to their job site, because a lot of the job sites here, the employer had, you know, they employed two students, so they worked at the same site, so it helped them get to the job and be confident, and, you know, taking the buses in downtown LA when you're 15, 16 years old is a big deal. The program lasts 5 weeks. They work Monday through Thursday, about 4 to 5 hours a day. Friday is we built in a career component. So not only are they working, but they go back to the host agency where they're getting work career readiness workshops. So they're prepared. They're talking about the week that they just finished. What was the good things about the job? What did they learn? What didn't they like? Did they have any issues with their immediate supervisor? How can you do conflict resolution, mediation, you know, problem solve? Because we want it to be engaged. We just don't want them to have a work experience. We want them to actually be prepared for other entry-level work and, you know, work while they're in college in their career. So we're doing these intensive workshops, resume writing. Some of the students I referred to the Lighthouse's BEP program didn't have a bank account. Some students are getting SSI and don't want to get paid because they'll lose their SSI. So we're doing that whole benefits education. When you're a student, you can keep your funds, and often sometimes the parents don't want them to get paid because they're collecting the student's SSI. And it gets real muddy. So basically the BEPYEP program is a 5-week summer work experience program, and it's met with tremendous success, and I've been able to travel around the state and help monitor that program. So with your support, we want it to grow.
One of the things is that we have to prepare. We do have to prepare some of the locations. Some of the vendors don't understand some of the kids coming in.
Yeah.
So it's easier for me because I've had two visually impaired teenagers, and so I know kind of the process of what they need to start with. But for totally blind people, I decided that rearranging my whole place, brailing and putting large print on my shelves, putting charts on my wall that show where everything goes into which refrigerator, and explaining that allows the person to do every single task in my place.
All of this sounds really wonderful when I remember how very little we had, absolutely no exposure of this kind when I was growing up. But do you have a way of having the parents get involved with this? For example, wouldn't it be great if the mothers of these kids came to your site, Joan, and saw what you do?
Well, in Sacramento, I used to be the president of CAPFE, so I know most of the parents of the kids my kids' age. And so these are the kids that are going through the youth program now. So I call them up because, you know, the teacher can't do that. Sometimes the teachers or the even the rehab counselor, there's a comfort zone there. But I don't have it because I can call them up. I don't have anything to lose. And I tell them, I said, you know what, your kid needs to take a shower every morning. And I told the kid too, but and it's true because some kids that came to work and they were not ready for work, and so I could call them up and say, you know, if this person has a Braille note, they need to bring it. Well, what if it gets lost? I said, well, if you don't use it, you're not going to have any. What's the good of having it? So I said, make that person be responsible. These kids today have had a lot of equipment and a lot of things handed to them. They need to be accountable.
Yes.
And they need to be able to say, yes, I'm responsible and I can get there. I can do this. And they need to be pushed a little bit because we have coddled them. And I have to say, I did some of that too. And now I make my daughter get there by herself. So
put her on the train. Let me kind of, I don't know how much time we have. I could be here till 2 o'clock talking about all the,
<Right. I'm
laughs> but I think you all want to go to general session and things like that. So in brief, just to kind of, because I was hoping to speak to the luncheon today, but it was canceled. I did bring some Braille and print articles that I wrote for the RSVC newsletter. It's basically one page explaining, the BEP, YEP program to mostly the vendors so we can get more vendors on board. So, I will pass these Braille and print copies around in just a minute or two once I'm done. One of the other things our transition council is doing, we put together, we assembled a website, and some of you have known about it, and it's called transition2employment.com, transition2employment.com. It's basically a one-stop resource for students, teachers, and advocates who are visually impaired in California to talking about transition, disability, and advocacy resources. Organizations such as this, college resources, scholarship resources, transition programs like the DPI, OCB, Living Skills Center, Blind Support Services, out-of-state services. We want students to be aware of all these services available to them, and it's on the web. And we've had, we met with success. We've had several hundred hits when we issued the site a year ago. And it's sponsored by the Transition Council, and all the agencies, including CCB, has a presence on there. So I invite you to go there, give us feedback. One of the things we recently implemented was a section called Youth on the Go. So we basically quarterly write an article about a youth and how they recently graduated from high school, whether at the Skills Center, whether they work in the BEP program. We're trying to highlight them and highlight and support all of our transition programs in a collaborative effort, because there's so many competitive programs out there, but we don't want to compete. We want to immerse and have students be involved in all those programs that are appropriate to them. So, again, transition2employment.com. Because our task force and I are busy, we are going to be out. Kathy and I will be back here in the February, March for CETVH right across the street of the Marriott. We'll have a booth. I'll be doing a lot of outreach to the state with counselors, mostly between January and May. We do most of our outreach to presentations to high schools. If you know of teachers who and programs that want to have us speak, please, please let me know. I still hear from teachers, well, I was told not to refer until they were 18. And, again, we're open for business as early as age 16 and maybe even 14.
Yeah.
Yes.
You knew me before 30. That's why you keep slipping. But I know. We won't talk about that. But I'm really excited about this program. I had Monique to come to this breakfast because she was one of the young people that fell through the cracks. When she graduated from the South Bay School District in San Diego, and she didn't know anything about Department of Rehab. She went on to the community college, to Southwestern. She had she got connected with disability services, but that was it. And she didn't have the supports that she needed, and she dropped out.
And so.
Does she have a rehab counselor now?
Nope.
No. Oh, well, we need to get you connected. What in the world? I know just who you need to speak to.
That's why I want, and you have given her.
Hello, I got the phone number.
And things, and so that she could do things. So, but do you have a program similar for young adults? Because, you know, she's a young adult now, but she's fallen through those cracks and didn't get the support. And 3 years ago, I used to do some consulting for a San Diego agency. And my desk was right across from the main desk, my office was. And the door was open, and a woman came in from the Chula Vista School District. She said she had 18 young people that were getting ready to get out of high school that were visually impaired, and she was trying to get them some services. Well, this place just does one, at that time, just did one-stop shopping. They had one program. The average age of their clients or consumers were like 70. And so I heard the woman say, well, you know, our 18-year-olds don't have anything in common with people that are their grandparents' age, and they didn't want to refer them to the program. And they said, well, that's all we have. So I'm
glad. They didn't refer to the Department of Rehab?
No, they did not.
Thank you for letting me know.
And so I was just incensed, but there's other things. You know, I told them to go to Braille Institute. I came out of my office, and I told them to, you know, to go to rehab. And
okay,
things
I was
of that nature.
Say,
but
yeah.
No, yes. No, okay. Catherine, I know better. But that's the information they gave. But I had to go catch her as she was going out the door, discouraged. So I'm excited about the program, and we'll pass it on through our Dawn presentation,
yes.
Disability Awareness Network, when we
Please
go into the schools.
Please do.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to those brochures, and I'm looking forward to Monique becoming a client. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I'll give you the name of the person you should contact, Monique.
We have Braille brochures, large print brochures, even Spanish Braille brochures, because we know there's a lot of Spanish-speaking folks
yes.
out there who...
And the
whole idea is, I get excited when I talk to this group, but I get really excited when I talk to the kids because I could connect
too.
With them, and I say, hey, what does rehab mean to you? And they go, well, is it like a drug detox agency? And they have this, you know, it's by who we are, rehab doesn't do us justice, so we have to really advocate and really sell ourselves. This is our whole marketing campaign, and I love it. I think it's a great job. It's a busy job. It's a challenging job, but it's a job that's necessary. I don't know if you guys had any other questions, but something I was going to mention about BFS, Kathy, I was going to say maybe because I think it's a publication that we do quarterly is our visionary. Did you want to talk about that?
The visionary is our newsletter, and in our visionary, we have highlighted different success stories of some of our consumers who have gone on to get employment, or maybe something about their BEP, YEP experience.
Exactly.
We really do try to get the word out, and this is on our website as well, the department's website. It's really, I think it's become a really good newsletter of all types of information.
But it's a tangible
talking
word for
about
youth.
The,
yeah.
Yeah, talking about what we're doing with our youth, talking about the different opportunities that people have had, the different careers that people have gone into. I see it as when we say the visionary, I want to call it hope. It is just giving so much hope to people and should. And I just wanted to say, our rehab counselors, I just think they are some of the most creative, innovative people I know. They're so, their education, but their experience, the way of trying to problem solve, and that's key. Being able to problem solve, being able to work with new ideas, they're willing to do that. And so, please, if you know of anybody who's interested in going into a career who has those kind of characteristics, those kind of qualities, we want them to think about going for careers in rehabilitation counseling, get their master's degree in rehabilitation counseling at our different universities, and join us. Join us as one of our professionals who can really help all of our consumers. We have somebody here who wants to comment.
Hi, this is Foster Brown from the Inland Empire chapter.
Yes.
Hey, Richard.
Hi, good morning.
All right. I was interested because I live in Riverside, California.
Yes.
And so I used to work, a few years ago, I worked special ed. and I found out that one of the schools in Riverside has like a blind student program, one of the high schools. And
okay.
I know they said some of the students were on Department of Rehab, but I'm not sure if they knew about like the programs you were talking about. So
in January of 06, I went to Riverside San Bernardino area with Ed Crespin and Kathleen Coombs, who are the counselors in the area, and there's others too. Who
have like been Louis Mestis.
Louis Mestis.
Okay.
So we blanketed that, and I know I just got an email from Kathleen before she took off on maternity leave that we're going to be doing some more outreach to those folks in January or February.
Oh, great.
So we do want to, you know, make an annual presence there, or at least every 2 years. Earlier this year, we did a lot of things in San Diego. And so we're out there, and absolutely. So I'll leave you with my contact information if you want to pass it on to folks.
That's great, because there's, you know, the Inland Empire is a really growing community.
It's the fastest growing.
And there are a lot of people, because there are a lot of people in my chapter that have lost their vision and stuff due to diabetes. And now with the way our society is, you have a lot of youth that are contracting diabetes at age 12 and stuff because of just bad diet, really.
And Foster, I don't know how many people in your chapter, this is just a general rehab thing, are newly blind and have ever been connected with rehab, but that's something you could have a local rehab counselor come out and talk to your chapter about what we do.
Yeah, well, Lewis is part of our, he's part of our chapter.
Oh,
so
cool.
He comes out from time to time and gives us information and stuff. But this is really interesting because I'm just getting ready to graduate from college, and I didn't find out about Department of Rehab until 94.
Okay.
And the way I found out about it was looking in the telephone book of the what's now AT&T, looking in the AT&T yellow pages.
We need to have like a little cheat sheet of just how people have found out about rehab, because there's so many interesting stories how people found out about rehab that we never knew about.
Yeah, really. And it's the kind of the sad part about it was like my parents were like were in denial of me being low vision as growing up. And my father was actually a state employee and knew about Department of Rehab and didn't tell me. So it's like, you know, it would be interesting to do a storyline.
Winifred, do you have a question?
But here you go.
I think it would be great if you...
Hang on, here's the mic.
It would be great if you and Joni wrote an article for the BC about this matter so that all of the people in, at least in our organization, knew what this is about and, you know, mentioned the visionary and that kind of thing.
Will do.
Because I never heard very much about it either. I knew Richard was involved in transition, but I never knew anything specific much about it. And Joni's examples are just wonderful, you know. That's
okay. Well, do anybody have any other questions? Because, again, I can talk about our STEP program. I can talk about what we're not doing, what we want to do. But I think we gave you a general overview of what transition is. Really quickly, something you guys don't realize that we do is all the students at the School for the Blind who are age 16 who are in their transition program actually have an active case with rehab. I'm their counselor. And all of them have on-campus and off-campus job opportunities, and that's a contract that rehab sponsors. It's a CSP-TPP's contract, and Lavernia Carr and Ann Linville currently run that program, and if you knew Pat Johnson, she recently retired, but it's an active program. One of our students, we asked the students at the beginning of the school year, what jobs do you want to do? And I think, Joni, you remember this, right? We had students who work in the pizza parlors, who work at the laundromats, and people work at DMV shredding envelopes. They're doing a lot of task-oriented jobs. Students playing pianos at the church. One of the students wanted to be a grave digger. And
okay.
Mark and
what was the name of that show? Oh, 6 Feet Under. I've been watching too much of 6 Feet Under.
Ann Linville, who I have a really good rapport with, is a job developer at CSP, and she helps run the STEP program in July. So I know her well. She's a good friend, and she came into my office at CSP the other day, and she goes, "Well, I have creative job developing. I got Mark a job doing a gravedigger." It took her a lot of
I hear they make good money.
She talked to the guy at the funeral home, and he kind of chuckled, but then she explained about, you know, getting a job at work experience to the blind people, and he connected, and he goes, "You know, a lot of blind people out there, people think blind people can't do jobs, and we know they can." So he went to HR, and he got it. He really got it, and so we're we're giving work experience to a blind 16-year-old digging graves. I mean, he's going to start off like wiping off the urns and all that other stuff, but yes, we will do it.
My father-in-law was a grave digger many years ago, so yes, people do that. There we go.
Joni, do you want to talk about the CAC?
Yeah, I was going to do that. Before I said that, they told Mark that now they use a backhoe a lot. He said, doesn't matter. There's got to be other jobs I can do. So there are lots of little jobs he can do around the funeral. He dusts off the chairs, and he puts out pamphlets, and he does dust off the urns, and he, you know, I guess he's going to get involved in some of the other things that I don't want to think about. But,
yeah. Every job is important.
But it's, yeah, I was really shocked when I heard that. But at the CAC, we have a lot of expertise at the CAC meetings. And, you know, if anybody's up in the Bay Area, the next one is December 13th. And it's before the concert. And Kathy, you like it. And it's all, and they have a lot of expertise. They talk about making sure that tests are, it will be at the School for the Blind,
okay,
and it's at,
okay.
And it's later, it's from 11 to 3 this time, I think.
Okay.
11 to 3, and we all buy lunch and have lunch. And then at the meetings we always talk about, we talk first about testing, you know, all the testing that the kids have to take has to, Steve Goodman works a lot with the testing, parts of the, you know, like the tests that are like the SATs, but the
high school
of Cassie, and the and then we talk about what's happening in the state as far as the clearinghouse and what's happening there.
The
statistics for the School for the Blind, and they have they only have like 85 students right now, but it gets higher, and then people drop off as the year goes on, if they graduate, and then they have to go back and start over and get more kids, you know, who need to come in. And they're going to talk about doing short classes. They talked about doing these, they're kind of like 1 or 2 week classes 4 times a year for kids, for a group of kids, and then other groups of kids will do it also. Like for, say if a kid needs help in math and abacus skills, and they can't get abacus skills with their teacher, they can go to the School for the Blind for only a week or so, pull them out, give them some intensive training, give them also some living skills and some adaptive PE skills at the same time, and then send them back out back to their districts so they don't have to stay at the School for the Blind, but they only stay for a short time.
Joni, one important thing that CSB does, and I let rehab counselors know, but I'd like the committee to know, if you're working with a student who is visually impaired and who is in the community who's not going to CSB, the CSB does provide free vision assessments and free tech assessments. And I tell all the rehab counselors, send your students to CSB
because
it saves us money.
And they
do really comprehensive technology evaluations. Mm-hmm. Jerry Koontz goes out and does the Braille note evaluations. And they do really good with UC Berkeley.
And they're good with working with kids. You could send them to some of these other agencies. They don't know how to work with kids. You know, like some of the agencies are just selling the product. They don't know how to work with kids.
And it saves us money. But they also come down to, I know a lot of you here are from San Diego. They partner with San Diego State, and they do a vision clinic 2 or 3 times a year where they take 2 or 3 days out of the week, and they shuttle in all those school students in the San Diego region who can't go up to Fremont for whatever reason to get those vision assessments.
And also, if they have if they have on hand a magnifier or a sunglasses or a monocular and they keep a big store of them that the kids need at the time of their vision assessment, they give it to the kid right there. There's no waiting.
It comes out of the fund, the education fund, so yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so the School of the Blind does more outreach than you know. That's a big part of what they do. That's a big part of why they can still be a School for the Blind. And in some cases, the kids weren't getting services that they needed in the counties that they belonged, so they do still go. A lot of kids do go to the School for the Blind. Oh, yes, they do. They have a great music program. All the kids can have music lessons when they're there. you have any questions? Anybody have questions? There's only one location. It's in Fremont. It's a gorgeous campus. It's very nice. And the and most of the students live in, there's a few day students, but most of the students live there.
And if you know students who would benefit from CSP, CSP will send someone out to assess the student in their school district and then determine if they can come in for a 50-day assessment to Fremont as referred by the school district. So the school district rehab counselors, just so it's clarified, can't just send the student to CSP, go get a revision exam. The school district has to refer them to CSP, and then the school district, with, you know, under consent, can send that report to the rehab counselor.
As a matter of fact, that low vision boy I had at with me this summer in the BEP YEP program just did his 50-day assessment, or is going to do his 50-day assessment pretty soon at CSP. He's just about done. He's just about done with it, and he's going to do his IEP in another week or so. Because there's a kid that was not really getting what he needed from the school district. He's in a regular class, but he wasn't getting anywhere. And he was over 18, but even those kids from 18 to 21 can benefit, 18 to 22 can benefit from a lot of, they have an apartment living program at CSB where if the kid's over 18 and shows himself competent enough to live or cook and stuff on their own or be responsible and they can learn slowly the cooking of the microwave and then the oven and the stove, then, and cleaning, then they can have an apartment with one of the students on campus.
The STEP program,
yeah,
that Lavernia Carr runs.
Is wonderful in the summertime.
You know, something you guys may want to consider, you have done in the past. I know he was invited to speak to the NFB this weekend, but if you have Dr. Wittenstein come out at one of your meetings, he can give you a whole update, too.
Yeah, I'm going to ask him in the spring.
Yep. Well, thank you, everyone. I'm done, unless you have any questions.
Does anyone have a question? Well, I appreciate you guys all coming to this educational breakfast, and I'm glad you all helped me out. And if anybody wants to serve on this committee that isn't now on my committee, please give me a call. I can give you my phone number. It's area code 916-359-1212. Or I'll be here all through Sunday, through Sunday afternoon. 359-1212. Because we can always... 1212. Yeah. We can use all the... ideas and thoughts and people on this education committee. Oh, sure, Brian.
Yeah, hi, this is Brian Connors. I just wanted to talk a little bit about something kind of from a different perspective of the Department of Rehabilitation. I'm a member of the State Rehabilitation Council, which is the kind of the advisory arm of the Department of Rehabilitation. And, I've been on the council for about a year now, and I think it would be fantastic if there was more emphasis on services for youth, particularly youth transition. In fact, I made a formal recommendation to the director asking him to consider Richard to be a member of the council as the single counselor representative on the State Rehabilitation Council. And so during the time that I've been there, there has not been one instance where anybody from the public has come to the council to make a recommendation about issues that need to be addressed, some of the programs in the department that could be changed or improved, or maybe some ideas and where the department could maybe add more funding. And these are the things, this is one of the functions of the council is to listen to the public and how the department can or get ideas and how the department can best represent the clients and then make policy recommendations to the department. But without that kind of feedback, really all we're doing is just responding to the reports that the staff gives us. So I strongly encourage anybody to come to our council meetings, make recommendations, and so that we can take them up and actually start making policy recommendations, which could include requesting additional funds for programs relating to youth transition, as well as any other programs that Department of Rehabilitation provides.
Yeah, that's great, Brian. Thanks. One of the things I wanted to say was that when we did this BEP-YEP program, and I thought that it's important to know that the people in the building, in the EDD building, were thrilled They love to see the kids' progress. They love to watch the kids learn. So it's not a problem of placement. So if that's an issue, I mean, I could convince most anyone, because I tell you that they really did. The employees loved it.
My name is Lorraine Foster. I'm from San Diego. I have had both good and bad experiences with rehab. When I was in college going to school to become a diabetic nutritionist, by the time my textbook came to me on tape, my class was over with. So I had a very difficult time getting through the class. Then about 2 weeks ago, Braille Institute in La Jolla had what they called a harvest services. And they had vendors come to present things that they had for the blind. And there was a rehab table there. I went to them because I did not know who my rehab counselor was. And I was really tired of being notified that my status had been changed to homemaker. I said, I've raised my kids already. I am not a homemaker. I want to get back out and work. Yes, we can. So another girl was there who was total. She was asking me about my dog because I just got back from Oregon with my new dog. And she asked me what I did at Braille Institute. And during the conversation, she said she had some clients who were sharing their insulin, sharing their glucometer, and were running out of supplies. Could I help? And, well, I just happen to have some extra strips that's the same kind that they use, so I'm going to meet with her when I get back home to give them to her. And also, then in the meantime, she said, they know nothing about being a diabetic. So she offered me the papers to fill out to become an independent contractor with rehab. And she said that she had other coworkers who had diabetic clients who also needed help with their diets and meal planning. So I'm very excited about this. Hopefully I will become one of you.
But she's going to be a 26 as self-employed real soon, I'm sure, when you get that counseling situation taken care of, Catherine.
I just wanted to respond to that issue you're talking about. That's a perfect example about how you could come to the council. The council is just one way that you could, to talk about the situation you went through and the problems you had. In particular, I'm leading the planning work team for the SRC, and one of the six projects that we're working on, as Kathy and Richard probably know, there's a new department-wide service delivery system, which is looking at the way that the department is delivering services to the Oh, great. All right. And so it's I guess it's in the beginning of its planning stages, and it's very, very comprehensive. Like I said, it's department-wide. And so getting that kind of feedback would be integral in developing the system. Kathy, did you want to talk more about that?
Okay, yes, I'm aware of the Service Delivery Task Force, and Tony Candela has nominated me to be on it, and with a couple of our other counselors as well, so that people who are serving people with vision loss will be represented on this task force, and it will be statewide, department-wide, and we really do need to find out how we can serve our consumers better, more effectively, more compassionately, and really adjust the needs that they really have. So there's a lot of work to be done. I just really have to emphasize we do have wonderful counselors. I can't speak high enough of them. So there's always going to be problems. I don't care what company you're with. You know what? Every single company that there is out there, they may be the best company or the best agency in the world, there's always going to be issues. But as the program manager, I do want to know what some of those issues are and what some of the concerns are, so that we can correct some of that. And maybe sometimes it's just a matter of some different communication. And so I want to be a part of that communication. Okay.
If there are no further questions, I think... Are there any further questions? I think we'll adjourn this meeting. It's been very productive. Thank you all for coming.